So now we're beginning the Nishkam Karma or Buddha Yoga section, which is till verse 53. Esha te bhita samkye buddhir yoga tvimam shrinu buddhya yukto yaya parta karma bhandam prahasasi. Thus far, I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Right? Samkhya. Now, listen, as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results, Buddha Yoga. O son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Right? When you're Buddha Yukta, when you're using your buddhi, then karma bandha prahasyasi. You become free from karma. So, this is directly addressing Arjuna's third objection, which is papam eva, right? In order to get free from sin, you have to rise above this level, this line here. You cannot be free from karma just performing karma kanda. You have to come up to the yoga platform, transcendental religious system. Of course, in Karmakanda, you know, there's a lot of rituals for getting free from different kinds of sins. But ultimately, you cannot get completely free from all of the various sins. In all the religious systems, like I grew up as a Catholic, so we used to go to the church, and we would confess before the father, the priest, I've committed these sins. He said, okay, so now you say these mantras. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And blah, 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 blah. And we had these prayers. And we'd have a mala also, like a rosary. 54, exactly one half, isn't it? And you know, we would say these on the mala, and that was how we get atonement from the sins. It's prayaschit. And in Karmakanda, there's prayaschit only. There's nothing which will get you completely beyond the sins. Just like we also see some religious persons, you know, they try to avoid sin by, you know, sweeping the ground before they walk, covering their face with a mask so they don't breathe in any bacteria or small microbes or insects. And they pluck out their eyebrows, you know, and they walk only barefoot and like this. The whole idea is to get free from karma. Because you have mahapap, you know, this is the pancha, I forget what it's called, pancha mahapap. You know, these, what is it? I forget. There's this.
Fire, lighting a fire.
Huh?
Lighting fire.
You're lighting a fire, or when you. Underneath udakumbi, underneath the pot, you, right? The water pot, you put it down, there's some insects there, you kill them, right? And then there's chuli. When you light the stove, there's something in. Some guys are inside there, right? They get killed. And then there's jadu. And when you're sweeping, then jadu, you're breaking the. You're killing some entities. That's three. There's a few more. Walking and. Huh? And breathing. Right. So all of these things. Well, there's pancha mahapap. That. But when one performs bhakti, then he doesn't have to worry about these things. Because all of his sins are being eradicated by the bhakti, by his connection to the Lord. It's a strong, direct connection with the Lord. So, but if someone's not, you know, strongly connected with the Lord, then he has those things and he has to be concerned about them. So in Karmakanda, there's practically no connection. And in Sakam Karma, also, the connection is very little. And then as you go up, the connection is more and more. And as you progress spiritually, you have to be less concerned about, you know, those kind of things, accidental sins. Of course, a devotee also avoids sins. It's not that he just thinks, hey, I'm transcendental, I can do whatever I want, you know. You know, he has like a carte blanche on, you know, on sins, on enjoying. No. He's also concerned, but if some accidental thing, breathing, drinking water, walking, sweeping, all those things, the body's not worried about this. Because his whole life is dedicated to God. So, but in Karmakanda, the person is still concerned, and he performs prayaschitta. That's mainly his religious performances. And then you can see how it's self-centered. Because the person is just thinking, how can I get free from this sin? How can I get free from that sin? How can I, this, I, that? I, me, mine. It's like, he's not meditating on God like the yogi or the jnani yogi or the ashtanga yogi or, what to speak of, the bhakti yogi. He's not meditating on God so much. He's meditating on me in the material world, getting free from all of these things. So I don't have to suffer and go to hell or get a lower birth or whatever. So it's still self-centered. But bhakti yoga is Krishna-centered. So there's a big difference now. Now when Krishna says buddhi yoga, he means nishkam karma yoga and bhakti yoga. And or bhakti yoga, according to the person. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explicitly described and explained this in his commentary. And you will see that Prabhupada also describes buddhi yoga in his commentary. Baladeva Vidyabhushan describes buddhi yoga as nishkam karma yoga, which incorporates jnana within itself. We'll explain this as time goes on. See, buddhi yoga is a kind of stretchable term. It can mean different things. And you can stretch the definition a little bit like this. It means bhakti. Now if you look at Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, right? In chapter 10, when Krishna is describing bhakti yoga, then he uses the word buddhi yoga, the dhammitam. I give them buddhi yoga. How they can come to me. Right? So in that way, buddhi yoga means bhakti yoga. When the person's fully dedicated, serving Krishna, like this. And then the person's still concerned with purification, and he can't surrender completely, and he's giving the fruits of his work. He's concerned more with his work. And after he works, then he gives some of the fruits, or he gives those fruits to the Lord. That's nishkam karma yoga. It's not on the same level. So the meditation more on my work, not so much on Krishna, Bhagavan. But the bhakti yogi, he's thinking Bhagavan. My work doesn't exist. All work is his work. And I belong to him. And my work, there's no idea of my work. It's just his work. His work is like my work. Like in the Christians say that, let his will be done, like that. Everything's focused on what God wants. So there are some elements of bhakti also in Christianity. We shouldn't just think that it's all karmakanda. Yeah, Jesus was a great Shakyavesh avatar. And there are like elements of bhakti there. But you have to know how to fish them out. You know. If you know what actually bhakti is, then you can see it in any different religious system. You can see it in the Quran, you can see it in the Bible, or in the Torah. Prabhupada comments in this verse 39. Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as his spiritual master by surrendering himself unto him. Shishyasteham shadimam tam prapannam. Consequently, Krishna will now tell him about the working process in Buddhi Yoga, or Karma Yoga, or, in other words, the practice of devotional service. You see? He's following the previous acharya's comments. This Buddhi Yoga is clearly described in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, right? Who's sitting in the heart as a Paramatma. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to this stage of Buddhi Yoga by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only to those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love does He award the pure knowledge of devotion in love. In that way, the devotee can reach Him easily in the ever-blissful kingdom of God. Thus, the Buddhi Yoga mentioned in this verse is the devotional service of the Lord. Right? And Prabhupada mentions numerous times in the commentary that here Sankhya doesn't mean the atheistic Sankhya. Okay, so you should know that. Then, in the last paragraph, again, he says, one should therefore understand that Buddhi Yoga means to work in Krishna consciousness, in the full bliss and knowledge of devotional service. He says at the end, there is much difference between work in Krishna consciousness and work for fruitive results, especially in the matter of sense gratification for achieving results in terms of family or material happiness. Buddhi Yoga is, therefore, the transcendental quality of the work that we perform. So when something is transcendental, then it's called yoga. From karma yoga, jnana yoga, and on upwards, it means transcendental. And karma kanda is not yoga. It's religion, but it's not yoga. And that's why there still has to be concern with prayaschita. But in yoga, the person is connected with the Lord. Now, what are some of the characteristics of Buddhi Yoga in the next verse in this described? This is the first verse in which Krishna is describing the characteristics of Buddhi Yoga. Okay? Nihabhikramana shosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So, the first thing is that on this path, there's no loss or diminution. That it's eternal. The things that you're performing here in Karma Kanda are not eternal. Right? And actually, even in Karma Yoga, you have to finish the activity. Otherwise, there's some loss. Yes, in Karma Yoga. There's some references in the Bhagavatam to this point. Right? 11... 15.23 proves that even Nishkam Karma Yoga is not Nirgun but Sattvic. Sattvic Gun. Sattva Gun. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes this verse in his commentary. So he says that actually nirgun bhakti is being described in this verse. I guess the top end of the Buddha Yoga definition. Because Karma Yoga doesn't have such quality. Because in Karma Yoga, you have to finish the activity, otherwise you don't get the result. In Bhakti Yoga, even if you just start something, right? Say you start building a temple, and you just only build the first floor, or the ground floor, and then you pass away. You get the benefit as if you had built the whole thing, because that was your intention, that was your motive. And in bhakti, the Lord is bhava grahi janardana. He accepts the bhava, or the mood of the devotee, as the most important thing. Not whether he actually, you know, finished the whole thing, or whether the temple has, you know, red granite or black stone, or if it's with bricks, or, you know. The Lord's not concerned so much with all these things. So a little advancement on this path, it delivers one from the Mahabhaya, right? Which is the great fear of what? Falling back down to the animal species, Prabhupada mentions. Right.
Is it ordinary karma yoga?
Huh? I can't hear what you're saying.
Is it ordinary karma yoga?
Is it ordinary karma? What is ordinary karma?
Ordinary karma yoga.
This verse, no. Because this is not describing the characteristics of karma yoga, but it's describing the characteristics of nirgun bhakti. So Buddha Yoga, as Prabhupada translated, it can be nishkam karma, or it can be nirgun bhakti, or pure devotional service. So nishkam karma, Bhagavad Arpita nishkam karma, is close to bhakti, because one is giving everything to the Lord. But according to the Bhagavatam, it's still sattvic. It's not nirgun. So there's some difference. And bhakti is completely transcendental. So Prabhupada says activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. That's the top end of Buddha Yoga. But even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. At the end, last paragraph, he says, material activities and their results end with the body, but work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after loss of the body. So in nishkam karma, the prominence is activity, not bhakti. But in bhakti, the prominence is devotion. Of course, it doesn't mean that the devotee is inactive. He's active, but the prominent thing that's going on, the dynamic of his working, is devotion. Well, for the nishkam karmi, the prominent thing in his existence is his activity. So as bhakti yogis, we have to remember that and not get too much absorbed in the work mode. That means we have to remember that we're doing it for Guru and Krishna, for their pleasure. And that means we should think of them and we should remember them. That's what makes our work nirgun. And that's what makes it bhakti, not just nishkam karma. Although nishkam karma is very nice because it brings you to the mode of goodness, which is a lot better than tama and rajagun. But devotion is the prominent thing. So it means our motive and our meditation is always on pleasing Guru and Krishna. That's bhakti.
I want a clarification.
Yes.
Verse number 38 talks about
Nishkama karma yoga, isn't it? 38?
Yeah.
Well, really, yes. But somehow they've kind of put it in the Karmakanda section. And, well, I think because here, from 39, Krishna says, okay, now, I've already told you about Sankhya. Now I will begin to describe Buddhi Yoga. Right? Because, in other words, he's switching from Jnana to Karma. Really. From Sankhya Yoga, which is a form of Jnana, into Nishkam Karma, or Buddhi Yoga, which is a form of Karma Yoga. Right? So he's switching from, well, you say Sankhya Yoga into Buddhi Yoga. Let's just say that.
I had another question in step number 40. You were saying that in Karma Yoga, unless one completes the job, it is not of any use, you were saying.
That's what Prabhupada wrote in the commentary.
So that's because after a person does the job, he offers it.
What's that?
After a person completes the task, completes the work, then he offers the fruits to Krishna.
Right, and if he doesn't finish it, then no fruits, there's no yoga. No yoga. But the devotee, right from the very beginning, he's connected, because he's even the first brick of the temple, it's for Krishna. It's not that he has to wait until everything's finished, and then he comes in, Om Swaha, and then he makes the offering. Right? In bhakti, it's more transcendental, because like, even before the person starts cooking the offering, just going to the market and gathering the things, that's also pure bhakti. It gets the same benefit, that person, right, who goes to the market, as the person, the pujari, who's cooking in the kitchen. But in karma field, it's not like that. There's some difference. Yeah.
I would like to understand this chart in the sense that we are struggling, most of us, with anarthas. So we are understood within the platform anartha nirvritti. Now, to me, it seems a bit hard to have bhakti as long as anartha nirvritti, or as long as that stage is prominent. And I wonder how the meditation on Krishna and Guru can be prominent, or say in another way, if a devotee in our stage desires purification of it, and with the goal to have bhakti, How is that related to the chart? Because you mentioned that purification, and it seems it's quite a low stage, just a little more than the good karma kandi. So could you clarify that?
Yeah. Well, purification is more for the karma yoga in general. A lot of it has, I would say, closer to nishkam. In sakam, there's more rajas. And then here, there's more rajas and tamas. And then here, it's just tamas. So it's gradual. There's no like I made lines just so we can analyze, because there are things that happen, but it's all blended. There's like shades of gray, and the modes and the motives and everything rises up gradually as one progresses. So, in the beginning, a Sankirtan devotee may go out just, so that he can be the best, and so that everyone will know that he did the best, and he, gets a big score, and And then gradually, as he does the activity, he gets purified. And then gradually he starts to go out more just for his own purification. That's more towards goodness. Let me just do my duty and let me get purified, and because I know I have so many anarthas. That's a mentality of performing it, bhakti, with a nishkam level, right? So that's okay, that's good. But then gradually, when the person does become more purified, then he's just in love with Krishna. And he feels like more spontaneous, like this. And he's just thinking of Krishna, because he's not just thinking about his own purification. And that's nirguna. So we're studying philosophy, so we're, you know, showing that there's these different levels. So, but all of the levels are good, as long as you're going in the right direction. And Krishna, you know, appreciates everyone, as long as they're coming towards him. If they're going away from him, even if they're on the highest level, then he won't appreciate it. But even if they're on the lowest level, if they're approaching him, then it's good. And then that person should be encouraged. But because we're studying objectively the philosophy, then we should understand that, you know, what are the differences on the different levels. We don't expect everyone to jump up on the highest level. But actually to be a bhakti yogi is not such an easy thing. So we're in the bhakti school, but we may be performing our bhakti on a sakam level, or even on a karmakanda level, or on a nishkam level, nishkam karma level, or on a gyan level.
To connect it to this present verse, then, would it mean that unless we are on the platform of having some genuine attachment to Krishna and do service like that, we don't necessarily get the benefit of eternal benefit, even if it's not completed? What you're pointing out, it has
of our service.
Describing the nirguna bhakti platform, and taking it that we are not really on that spontaneous platform with some genuine attachment to Krishna. The question may be: to what do we get actually from if we don't finish it now?
Don't finish what now?
Our bhakti, our as we describe it here. Now we get whatever we do in devotional activity, it's a...
Okay, but I mean, for us, we're in the bhakti school. We're not in the karma yoga school. We're not in the gyan school. So we have some bhakti. And to the degree that we have that bhakti, then to the degree that our activities have the same quality. And we may not be on the highest level, but we're chanting the holy name, we're worshipping the deity, we're studying Bhagavatam and other bhakti shastras. So that is nirguna. Even we may not be nirguna, but the holy name is nirguna and the Bhagavatam is nirguna. And so gradually we're becoming transcendental. Mamcha yogi vicharena bhakti yogena sevati sagunan samatit yayatan mamam huyaya kalpita. We gradually attain this transcendental level. And it's a gradual process. When we're chanting, that also it's not shutanam, it's abhasnam, right? So we're not getting the full benefit of the holy name. When we take a bath in Radha Kund, we're not getting the full benefit of bathing in Radha Kund. We're taking snana bhas. You know, everything we do is like, because we're coming in contact with the absolute, but we are not absolute. So we're getting something. A bhas is coming, and that is eternal, because we're in the bhakti school. But when we're talking about our activities, if our activities are wholly and solely dedicated to God, then that's like maybe on the border of sattva gun and nirguna. There's something. Some of our activities are like sattva gun, and some of our activities are nirguna. And gradually it comes more and more towards nirguna, as we progress. So we're connected with the Absolute, and therefore there's yoga, and therefore there's eternal benefit. But not all of our activities may have that quality. Prabhupada says that if someone, as far as I remember, he's describing a devotee. And if he's... Oh, no, I'm sorry. He says that if a person passes away performing karma yoga, then he goes to the higher planets. If he passes away in performing jnana yoga, then he goes to Brahma Jyoti. And if he's a devotee, then he goes back to Godhead in Bhakti Yoga. So that's a very general understanding. And that should give us some indication, of our consciousness is fixed on Krishna, and we go back to Godhead. And if not, if we pass away, we may go to some higher place in this universe, but which may be closer to Krishna, maybe like Dhruvaloka or the planet Rama, where the Lord is residing, or even Brahmaloka, where Lord Vishnu is residing. Because someone who goes to Brahmaloka, he's getting darshan of Lord Vishnu, and he's making offerings to Lord Vishnu, and he takes shelter of Brahma, and when Brahma goes back to Godhead at the end of his life, then that person also goes back to Godhead according to his rasa. So there's also like intermediate places, like a person is transcendental but not fully, he doesn't have prema or bhava, then he'll go up and he can continue from that point onward. The other planet I was mentioning, Rama Priya, is a place where Lord Vishnu resides within the material universe. It's possible he could go to such a place. And Dhruvaloka is also for Vaishnavas who are not fully purified. They take birth there. And that's an eternal planet. And then he gets Sangha with Dhruva Maharaj. There's a Shuddha Bhakta. And then he continues. And Brahma is also Shuddha Bhakta. Shuddha Bhakta Charanarin Bhajana Anukula. So he gets Anukul Bhajan. It's beneficial, it's favorable. All right, let's continue. Text 41. So Krishna is describing Buddha Yoga, and he says that there's no loss or diminution. Now, what else does he say? Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana bahushakayanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Prabhupada comments, a strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called vyavasayatmika intelligence. So that's Prabhupada's definition of the word vyavasayatmika, buddhi. Strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will come to the highest perfection of life. And he quotes Shraddha Shabde, Vishwas Kahi, Sudhuda Nischoy. Krishna Bhakti Kaila Sarva Kamakritahoy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, only by bhakti can intelligence become one-pointed. So again, Vishwanath is pointing that this verse must be talking about bhakti, the high end of the Buddha Yoga definition. Right. Prabhupada says in the second paragraph, the resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Right. Based on knowledge. That's why we're studying bhakti shastras. Otherwise, if it's just sentiment, it won't be resolute and our determination will be weak. No. And Prabhupada says in the third paragraph, service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student, and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. This is what this Vyavasayatmika Buddhi means, that when you make the mission of the guru your mission in your life, then you develop this one-pointed consciousness, ekeha gurunandana. So when Prabhupada was reading the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he became greatly inspired deeply within his heart. And it is actually this verse which has created the ISKCON movement, the Hare Krishna movement. This verse alone. Because when Prabhupada read this verse, he felt so inspired by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary that he fixed his mind on going to the West and preaching, following the order of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we'll read that commentary, which is in Surrender Unto Me. Of all kinds of intelligence, buddhi, the best intelligence is focused in bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, one's intelligence becomes single-pointed or fixed in determination. One thinks, the instruction of my spiritual master is to worship the personality of Godhead by chanting, remembering, serving his feet, and so on. The instructions of my spiritual master to worship the personality of Godhead by chanting, remembering, serving his lotus feet, and so on are my only sadhana, my only sadhya, my only life, my only livelihood. I am unable to give up these instructions, either in the stage of practice or in the stage of perfection. They alone are my object of desire and my only responsibility. Besides them, I can desire no other responsibility, not even in my dreams. It is all the same to me whether I feel happy or unhappy, or whether my material existence is eradicated or not. So when Prabhupada read that, he thought of his Gurudev, and then he thought that, yes, I must carry out his orders. He asked me that I should preach in the West in the English language, and now I should do that. So in his commentary, Prabhupada quotes from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, yasya prasad bhagavat prasada, yasya prasadan nagati katopi. And this is the way that we can push ourselves forward and develop our fixed intelligence in bhakti by fixing our minds on the order of the spiritual master. Okay. Texts 42 and 43.
Yamimam pushpitam bacham pravadantya vipaschitaha vedavararata partha nanyarastiti badinah kamatmana svargapara janma kalma phalam pranam kriya vishesha bahulam bhogaishvaryam katim prati.
Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So those who are attached to the flowery words of the Vedas are called Vedavararata. They are described also in the Ishopanishad, as you've already studied. Yeah? You remember that commentary? Prabhupada really socks it to them in his commentary. You know. I remember that. And so they are of avipaschitaha. They're foolish men. Stupid men. They're attached to the externals or the accoutrements of the Vedas. And they have not understood the essence, but are absorbed only in the form of religion. Here is the first time Krishna mentions the word Vedas in his conversation to Arjuna. And now he condemns heaven, which in the previous section he was saying, this is good, right? Swara dvaram apavritam. He was saying that the Dharma Yuddha opens the doors to heaven, Arjuna. How wonderful it is. Don't worry, even if you die, you go to heaven. Jai. But now he's saying that just idiots are attached to going to heaven. Alright? So you can see he's really shifted gears. Before he was speaking on this level. But now, when you go up higher, the lower level seems much lower. So the higher level is the enemy of the lower level, or you could say. That's why there's sometimes conflict in religions, in different religions, because there may be emphasis on one level or another. Like, for these people, it's good if they work, get married, and work in Karma Yoga. But for the person on Jnana Yoga, he's detached. He's an ascetic. Right? So the information or the injunctions for the Jnanishta person, who's like liberated from desires, is that he should just avoid women, and avoid family life, and like this. And that becomes the enemy of the person who are on this level. Right? But for the person here, it would be a great advancement for him to go up there. And for the animal person, like a hippie, it would be good for him to start performing karmakanda rituals. You see? So that's why there's sometimes conflict in different religions. Or even in the same religion. Right? So we should understand what are the different levels. So someone who's kamatmana, svargapara, that he's desirous of achieving heaven, and he's interested in janma, karma, pala, pradam, getting good birth, and fruit of karma, pala. He wants the fruits of his action, his work. What does he do? Kriya Vishesha Bahulam. He's into a lot of pompous ceremonies. Kriya Vishesha Bahulam. And his for him, the goal is bhoga and aishwarya. But Krishna says, prabhadanti avapaschitaha, that this is for foolish people. So Krishna is saying that the irresolute sakkam karmis are very dull-witted, foolish people. To explain this, the Lord speaks this verse. That's the purpose of this verse. Prabhupada comments. He mentions about Chaturmasya Yajjina Sukritam Bhavati. Right? You see, in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, it is mentioned Apama Somam Amrita Abhuma and Akshayam Havai Chaturmasya Yajjina Sukritam Bhavati. Right? So this is from the Shruti, from the Karma Kanda section. And it's about drinking somarasa and performing chaturmasya, and you can develop sense gratification and to fulfill your desires. Right? If you perform the chaturmasya yagya, then you can become eligible to go to the heavens and drink somarasa. This is directly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Prabhupada says, such persons have no faith in liberation from material bondage, and they are very much attached to the pompous ceremonies of the Vedic sacrifices. They are generally sensual, and they do not want anything other than the heavenly pleasures of life. And he describes that, you know, there's in heaven, there's the Nandan Kanana, the garden of Nandana. That's not Nandanandana. That's just, you know, it's a garden, Nandana garden. And there are, you know, celestial beauties, you know, apsaras and gandharvas roaming about. And if you're lucky, you'll meet one. And you can go and, you know, drink somarasa with her and enjoy life, kissing her passionately and enjoying life. Yeah. He says, there's good opportunity for association with angelic, beautiful women. Angelic women. Now, okay, so we see that Bhogaishvarya, Gatim Prati. But now, Krishna says, Bhogaishvarya, Prasaktanam, Taya, Parita Chetasam, Vyavasayatmika, Buddhi, Samadona, Vadiyate. For those people, in the minds of those who are attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and are bewildered by such things, this vyavasayatmika buddhi for bhakti to the Lord does not take place. Right? This is an obstacle. So Krishna is condemning the previous section, and he's preaching Arjuna to push him up past this line up to the Karma Yoga level. And he said, that is how we can get this Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, when you come to this level. And people who are attached to enjoyment, they'll never be able to do that. So therefore, Arjuna, you have to rise above the lower injunctions of the Vedas that are filled with the lower modes of nature. You have to become nistraigunya. Right? Chaigunya Vishaya Veda Naistraigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandva Nitya Satvastho Niroga Kshema Atmana. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary called the Gita Ranjana, means, you know, enjoying the Gita, he explains that there's two levels that there's the Udishta and Nirdishta Vishaya in the Shastras. The Udishta and Nirdishta Vishaya. Vishaya means the object. There's a double D in this word. Udishta and Nirdishta Vishaya. Said that when something is the ultimate object of the scripture, it is called the Udishta Vishaya. The ultimate objective, right? And when something else points to that ultimate objective, it is called the Nirdishta Vishaya. And that Nirdishta Vishaya can also be helpful because it is pointing to the ultimate objective and therefore directing people to go there, to that place. So the Vedas have lots of injunctions which are of the lower modes of nature. And as I mentioned in the class before, that some of them are actually, or maybe a lot of them, are created by Maya Devi herself. And they actually keep one in material existence. It just encourages one to become pious and enjoy and go to higher planets and to enjoy pleasures in this world. And so people can continually perform sacrifices on the earth, rise to the heavens, and then fall back down again in the form of raindrops, enter into the grains, become eaten by a person, a man, and he enters into his semen, and then is injected into the womb of his next mother, and then takes birth again. Then he grows up. Then he performs more sacrifices. And then again he goes up, stays there until all his karma is finished. Then he falls back down again in the form of the raindrop. You know? Of course, it doesn't mean that all the raindrops have spirit souls in them. Because nowadays, especially, there's very few people that are going to heaven. Most people are going to the other place. <You know? laughs> So the raindrops don't have too many spirit souls in them nowadays. But those injunctions are not the Udishta of the Vedas, they're the Nirdishta. Yeah. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example of the Arundhati star. Someone might want to see and the Arundhati star in the sky, but it's very faint and difficult to see. So therefore, someone might point out a nearby star which is very bright at first to get him in the right direction. And then once he catches that big star, then he'd say, okay, now just look a little bit to the left. Okay, now that's the Arundhati star. So that's what Krishna does in the Vedas. He gives some other things which are close. And that's what Nishkam Karma Yoga is. It's very close to bhakti. So if you can find that and perform that, then bhakti is just a little bit beyond and next to Nishkam Karma. So also these things are also, in Karma Kanda, it can be helpful. But if one gets stuck here, looking at the other star, and never, you know what I mean? If he falls in love with the bright star, he'll never find the Arundhati star. So at least the scriptures and the sadhus should point to the Udishta Vishaya, the ultimate objective. Even though the persons may not be able to perform that, but at least everyone should know what is the ultimate objective. At least for us, because we're preaching Bhakti Yoga. The Vedas, okay, you know, it's like everybody can get what they want and what they feel comfortable with. And, you know, ultimately we don't want to disturb somebody too much. But at least we should gently point out what is the ultimate goal. Prabhupada says, the Vedas deal mostly with fruitive activities to gradually elevate the general public from the field of sense gratification to a position on the transcendental plane. Arjuna, as a student and friend of Lord Krishna, is advised to raise himself to the transcendental position of Vedanta philosophy, where in the beginning there is Brahma Jigyasa, or questions on the supreme transcendence. Prabhupada says, when the activities for sense gratification, namely the Karmakanda chapter, are finished, then the chance for spiritual realization is offered in the form of the Upanishads, which are part of different Vedas, right? As we described in our first class, right? Those are Gyanakam, right? As the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the fifth Veda, namely Mahabharata, the Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. Before the Gyanakanda, there's no transcendental life. There's only religious life, which is good, but it's not better, and it's not best. So in religion, there's good, better, and best. So they're all good, but there's gradations. So this is good, this is better, karma yoga, jnana yoga, nishtanga yoga, and then best is bhakti yoga. And animal life is bad. Right? Okay, next verse.
Yavan arta urapane sarvata samputo deke tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanataha.
All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purpose of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the ultimate purpose behind them. Right? I'm adding the word ultimate there to stress what is the meaning. So, Krishna is giving an example to illustrate this point to Arjuna. Because in India, you know very well that there are different, in a village, there are different tanks of water. And they have different purposes. There's a tank for drinking. And that is the cleanest water. And that's the, you know, mittapani or pinakapani, right? And so nobody will take a bath in that well or bring their buffalo there, or right? Or wash their clothes with soap in that water, right? Well, they certainly won't urinate there, right? And then there's another well, you know, the dirtier one, they bring their buffalo, or there's maybe another one that's a little cleaner where they wash the pots and the clothes, right? And so there's different functions for different wells. Then there's a place where the women bathe, which is somewhat secluded, right? There's a lot of shrubbery there and trees, so nobody can see them. And then there's another place where the men bathe. So there's different functions and there's different places. But if there's one huge lake, then all of those things can happen all in that one place. Because the lake is so big that it won't be contaminated. Then all of the functions, you know, the ladies can go on one side of the lake and the men can be on the other side. And the buffalo can be, you know, bathed on the other side and the people can drink water from the other side. So all that one big lake can serve all of the functions of the smaller wells of water. So one who is vijanataha, right? Brahmanasya vijanata. Then he need only do buddhi yoga. Then all of the other functions of the lower levels of religion are automatically included within buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. And that is the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. Let us see if we have some other statements here. Vishwanatha Chakravartitaka says, one additional advantage of the big lake is that you go to one place for one, it's like having a big supermarket, right? You don't have to go to the different shops. You don't have to walk and travel to this well and to this tank and that to that kund and this. That. You go to one place and all of your functions in one place. That's the advantage of the one big lake. So the Buddha Yoga is the big lake. All of the lower functions can be performed. And also, he says that water is more easily available in the lake than in the well. In other words, the well, you have to throw down a bucket and, you know, pull it up. But in the well, it's just right there. Just dip the bucket and it's right there. There's no pulling on this. And also wells, sometimes they don't have sweet water. Sometimes it gets polluted. But a lake will always be pure if it's big. Big lake. It was Baladeva Vibhushan who mentioned Upanishads, and as Prabhupada mentioned in his commentary in the last verse. So we stick to the Vedantic portion of the Vedas and we quickly come up to the high level of high platform of religion. The Upanishads are that section of Vedanta, Jnana. But the purpose of Jnana or Vedanta is bhakti. And the Vedas are mostly kama with the purpose of bhakti. They're the Uddishta Vishaya is bhakti. And there's lower levels of Nirdishta Vishaya. So, because Krishna has explained several various levels and alternative levels of activity, which is maybe confusing. So in the next verse, he explains his specific level for Arjuna. Okay? Because Arjuna is wondering, okay, well, where do I fit in all this?
Karmanyivadikarasti ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalahetur bhur mate sangastva karmani.
You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities and never be attached to not doing your duty. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that as your Guru Dev, I am now specifically telling you what is your duty. Your adhikar is to perform your work, your nishkam karma. But you should perform that without attachment to the result. And you should never think that you are the doer. And of course, you should never just give up that duty. So these are the directives for the level of nishkam karma yoga. Karman yeva adhikaraste. These are definitely your level of adhikar, Arjuna. The word eva is important here. Karman yeva adhikaraste. For you, he's saying. And he says that, I'm driving your chariot without question. Now you do what I say without question. You know, surrender to me. Because he, Arjuna asked him to become his guru, so now he's taking the role. So he's explained all, you know, different levels. And now, what should Arjuna do? He should do his dharma, his karma nyeva. He should perform his work, his activity, but without attachment to the fruits, ma phaleshu kadachana, at any time. That's nishkam karma. Right? And he shouldn't think that he's the doer. Ma karma pala hetu bhur. Don't become the hetu, the cause of that. Don't think that you're the cause of it, of the fruits. And mate sangha astu akarmani. Don't become attached to not doing it either. Because if someone's not attached to the fruits, they may just say, well, why should I even do this? Right? Sour grapes, right? Oh, I'm not going to do this at all. What's the use? What's in it for me? Nothing. So, absolutely, when we first come to ISKCON, also, we may also have this kind of mentality. What can I get out of these activities? You know, what's in it for me? But, you know, the temple commander comes and says, you know, Prabhuji, please come and wash the pots in the kitchen. And the new bhakta will say, why are you asking me? Why don't you ask somebody else? You know? Well, you know, you don't want to do this? Well, I don't mind, but I mean, give me a good reason why I should do it. Give me 50 good reasons. I have to convince him, right? Because he's thinking, you know, about his own, you know, his own pleasure. But if he comes to a higher level, he says, yes, I can get purified. Of course, the devotee said, yes, if you wash the pots, then you're scrubbing your heart. Ah, okay. Right? So then it's like preaching on this level. Right? Okay, I can get purified. Yeah. Right? Then he gets enthusiastic. Right? But if you tell him, you know, well, you know, if you do this, then you'll develop pure prema. And you'll be able to revive your sarup in Brajadam and, you know, dance with Krishna in the Rasa Lila. What? Not ready for that one yet, you know. Right? So the different levels. I remember once when I was a new bhakta, and it was in the St. Louis Temple, and after the Sunday feast, in the temple president would try to get everyone to help wash the pots, you know? And sometimes it was difficult. And then I thought, oh, I don't want to do that now because I'm so tired. My whole belly's full of food and I just want to take some rest. And then, you know, so I hid under the bed in the bhakta room, you know? And he came in there, hey, where is everybody? Come on, wash the pots. And it's under the bed. And he lifted it up. He said, hey, there you are. I caught you, rascal. All right, okay. Ta-da. Caught you. So, you know, everybody goes through all these different levels. But it's in bhakti, you know. And gradually... But at the same time, even though a person's on a low level, I also remember that, like, I was on the Radha Damodar bus. And so we were worshipping Radha and Krishna. And I was making garlands for them every day. I learned how to make garlands also, you know, right from the beginning. And somehow became attached to them. So when they said, okay, now we're going to have a big meeting, and we came to one place, and they said, now Radha Damodar are going to go on the farm, and now we're going to put Nimayini Thai, the Gornitai on the altar here for our bus. We'll have Gornitai. And the devotee said, yeah, don't worry. I said, well, what happened? Radha and Krishna, now we're going to worship different deities? They said, yes. But don't worry, Lord Chaitanya is both Radha and Krishna. Said, okay. But philosophically, it wasn't enough, you know. So when they took Radha and Krishna away, I remember I started crying. I felt attached to the deities, even after 6 months of, you know, serving them. So you can see how bhakti is like very powerful. Even though, you know, being on the level of, you know, selfishness, still the bhakti is, you know, overpowering the heart and creating attachment and different other transcendental samskaras. So although we may be on the beginning level, still bhakti yoga is so powerful that Krishna can capture your heart. So you get the ultimate benefit right from the very beginning because of Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada comments here that Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Huh? And it's like I was hiding under the bed, so that's... It wasn't that I was detached from washing the pots. Or you could say that. But I was attached to not doing it. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is a cause for bondage. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. Okay, next verse. Yogastha kuru karmani sangam chakva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva samatvam yoga uchate. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. So he's defining, he says, samatvam yoga uchate. Yoga is said to be this samatvam, this equanimity. To what? Siddhi, asiddhyo, success and failure. Samo bhutva, become equal in that. And sangam tyakva, dhananjaya, give up all attachment. This is become situated in yoga, Arjuna. Yogastha kuru karmani. Rise above the karmakanda section, yogastha. Be situated in yoga. So, nishkam karma gradually develops into jnana nishta or jnana yoga. It transforms. As we'll hear, Baladeva Vidyabhushan and others, particularly he makes these comments of the stem of the lotus flower. The stem has fibers in it. Right? If you cut and you look inside, there's these like little capillaries, canals that the flower drinks the water with. So those things you cannot see from the outside. Only if you cut it open you will see that there's these strands inside. So inside nishkam karma yoga are the strands of jnana. They're hidden inside one's daily detached duties. As one performs his nishkam karma, then he comes to it transforms into jnana, because the jnana is hidden inside of those prescribed duties. Therefore, it is recommended one perform his prescribed duties. Because gradually he will come to jnana. What jnana? Knowledge that you're not the body. You realize that you're a spirit soul by performing your regular duties. In the Gita Bhushan by Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he says, don't think you're the doer, Arjuna, speaking as Krishna. Attachment to the fruits means being drowned in Maya. Fruits are meant to be offered to the Lord.
If you're a thief, Maya will be angry at your thievery. Alright, don't try to enjoy the fruits on your own. So yoga equals, or the definition is being equipoised in duty during success or failure. Prabhupada writes, the following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practice in the process called Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. One has to become the servant of Krishna, or the servant of the servant of Krishna. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. Text 49.
Durena yavakar karma buddhi yoga dananjaya buddha sharanam anvicha kripana kala etava.
O Dananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers.
So Baladeva Nibhushan comments that
cultivate the proper understanding about the self by continuous practice of Nishkam Karma Yoga. And with this understanding, abstain from abominable acts. Fruit of activity is the cause of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease.
Abominable activities. Yes, this is the word avara. Right?
Well, Krishna is preaching to Arjuna to rise above karma kanda. And he's saying that it is Buddha Yoga is far better. Buddha Yoga. It's like in comparison, it's in the Panchami case. So you should, it's much better than karma kanda. By a long way, much, much better, by a far way, Durena, he, indeed. By far, you could say. Durena means by far. Again, Krishna is just comparing and preaching Arjuna to rise above karma kanda to yoga, Buddha yoga. And for Arjuna, because he's a grihastha and because he's a passionate kshatriya, at least in his, you know, dramatic role in the Mahabharata Leela, then it's recommended that he should perform Nishkam Karma Yoga.
Text 50. Buri yukto jahatiha ubhe sukrita duskite tasmat yogaya yujasva yoga karma sukaushalam.
A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work.
So, as Narada Muni had described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, how that may be some remedial measure of the same thing, of activity or work. So Krishna is saying something similar here, that karma koshalam, the art of work, that mercury is poisonous. And if you just drink it, then you'll die. But mercury can be used as medicine also, to cure one. So karma itself just creates bondage. But karma, when you direct it towards the Lord, then it becomes like medicine. And karma with knowledge, you can use it like one can use
mercury with knowledge to create mass. So karma can be used, but it should be done in the proper way, and that is an art. So that's what it means by karma koshala. Text 51.
Karma jambudhi yuktahi phalam chakva manishinaha janma bandha vinirmukta padam gacchantyanamayam.
By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead.
So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that detached work leads to realized knowledge of the soul.
Then one can gradually become blessed with knowledge of the Lord and then surrender to Him. Such surrender frees him from the material world. And after he achieves liberation, after liberation, he becomes eligible to attain Vaikuntha. So this is the yoga ladder, the crux of the yoga ladder. Detached work leads to nishkam karma. Detached work leads to jnana nishtha. You realize that you're not the body, that you're a spirit soul. That's from karma to jnana. And then one can gradually be blessed with the knowledge of the Lord. And then you surrender to the Lord. And then that surrender frees you from the material world. You become liberated. And then from liberation, you enter Vaikuntha. It's the same.
52.
Got two more verses now.
Yadate moha kalilam buddhirvyatitarishyati tada kantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shutasya cha.
When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So this is sometimes a kind of curious verse, at least in English. It's not so easy to understand. But we see the words shrotavyasya shutasya cha. Right? So shruta is similar to shrutis, right? In the Vedas, the shruti praman. In other words, the original four Vedas, which are mainly karmakanda. So when your buddhi rises above the illusion, moha kalilam, then you'll become, at that time, callous, nirvedam, to what you have heard in the Shrutis or in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Because they are dealing with external rituals, not the essence of the Vedic knowledge, which is Vedascha Sarvaham, Aham Eva Vidyoga. And Krishna is the goal in the Vedas. So someone has to be very intelligent to squeeze that out of the Vedic knowledge. And most people don't have that insight. So therefore, when your intelligence rises to Buddha Yoga, then you won't listen to or be concerned with the lower instructions in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. It won't be very interesting to you. And Prabhupada quotes Madhavendra Puri, who is also a great devotee, and he says, Sanyavadanam bhadramastu bhavadu bhusnan tubhyam namo. I offer you my pranam, my dear morning bath, right? And my sanyavadanam, and my usual prayers. Bho deva, hey demigods, pitarascha, and For false tarpana vidao naham shama shamyatam. I cannot make my offerings to you anymore. Please forgive me. Shamyatam. Yatra kvapi nishadya yarava kulo tamasya kanksadrisha. Why? Because now I'm fully focusing on the best of the Kula, of the Yadu dynasty, who is Kamsadrisha, that enemy of Kamsa. I'm thinking about him. Smaram, smaram. Again and again I'm thinking, agham, harami. And this is destroying. I'm destroying the sins by this thing. I think there's enough for me. There's nothing else I have to do. So when one has the higher level, then the lower level, he's indifferent to whatever he's heard of those things. So what is like the life for the Karmakandawala? You know, Sandhya Vandana and Sandhya Snan and all of these other things, and the Deva Puja, Pitri Puja, these things, Tarpana, right, these offerings. He says, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I can't, I'm not going to offer these things for you anymore. Like this. Very interesting verse. So you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sometimes he didn't bathe for 1 or 2 weeks. Because he's a Mukta Purush. And he told his disciples, but don't you try this. Because you will be immediately put in the mode of ignorance. But when someone is transcendental to the modes of nature, then he doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to consider all these, all the things. So here Prabhupada says that if one can reach the platform of understanding by service to the Supreme Lord Krishna, he has no longer to execute different types of penances and sacrifices as recommended in the revealed scriptures. And similarly, if one is not understood that the purpose of the Vedas is to reach Krishna and simply engages in the rituals, then he is uselessly wasting time in such engagements. Person in Krishna consciousness transcend. Persons in Krishna consciousness transcend the limit of Shabda Brahma or the rage of the Vedas and Upanishads. Very interesting. Huh? Okay. So, this is the last verse. Again, here's the word Shruti.
Shruti vipratipannate yadastasiti nishchala samadavachala buddhistada yogam avapsisi.
When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. Yoga. So Krishna says to Arjuna, now you consider it, and then follow this practice. Arjuna says, but when will the result of self-realization come, Krishna? And Krishna answers in this verse, when you're indifferent and your heart is purified, at that time, tada yogam avapsasi, and you will have attained yoga. So Krishna has now very successfully preached to Arjuna to come up from the Karmakanda level to the Nishkam Karma Yoga level, which is very close to bhakti. In the beginning, he is stressing more the bhakti aspect in those first two verses. But we see later, he stresses a little bit the karma. It says, karma nyeva dikaraste. So therefore I say, Buddha Yoga is a stretchable term. It stretches from this verse, karma nyeva dikaraste, all the way up to the Dhammi Buddha Yoga Tam in chapter 10. And we see from all of the commentators mentioned that it has this kind of, it can mean Nishkam Karma and also Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada also says, Vishwan Chakravarti and Baladeva Vibhushan. Okay, so then that's it. Last sentence, Prabhupada mentions that in Krishna consciousness, one comes directly into communion with Krishna, and thus all directions from Krishna may be understood in that transcendental state. One is sure to achieve results by such activities and attain conclusive knowledge. One has only